Post-Gazette's Jerry Dulac made an appearance on the Rich Eisen Show. The topics were many. The answers were interesting. Let's hear a few and let's riff on them, Bob, if you wouldn't mind. Would you mind?
No. I'm ready for whatever you have.
Limits?
Joe, I have three clips for you here, and each one I think gets more and more interesting. First, Dulac with Rich Eisen saying that the Steelers weren't interested in Shadur.
I can't tell you where he was in a pecking order, Rich, but I will tell you, despite what all the national people thought, they did not intend to draft him. You know, if he was there on the sixth round, and maybe, but, you know, the people that had him going to the Steelers and had him going at 21, that just wasn't going to happen. No quarterback was going at 21. That includes Jackson Dart, who they did have a first-round grade on. But I don't think he factored in, and you could see how many times they passed on him. If they were going to take him, they would have tried to take him in the fourth round. Well, but it wasn't high on their list.
Well, again, I agree with generally their thought process going in that they weren't going to take a quarterback. You could have a first round grade. That doesn't mean it's going to be labeled as a franchise quarterback. There are a lot of guys I'm sure they had first round grades on. They decided to go in a way to fill some of the big voids they had and delay any thought about a quarterback in the first round until next year. And I've said that from the beginning, and I've never changed my
view. You've been very consistent in your thinking with that. I said going into the draft, I would absolutely take Sanders based on the quarterback I saw. But the circus, and when I got called into action on Saturday and was doing a show here, Starkfest, Bob, I don't know if you missed it or not. I thought you
heard it on my way
call.
Home. No, I wouldn't do that to you. Because I have too much respect for the office.
that I wouldn't have put up with that. The more I looked into Deion and the things that he was doing and saying, I don't know if you heard former Vikings receiver Chris Carter ripping into Deion and Shadur.
And also the podcast you played that day when his father came on and made it very clear that he was going to direct everything in his son's future. Which is not the way to go at this point. It's his life. You've done what you can to put him in a position. Let him go.
He apparently is wanted by the Toronto Argonauts of the CFL. And as crazy as that sounds, Bob, would you consider that if you were him?
No.
To go in there and be a star like Doug Flutie was, like Warren Moon was in the CFL?
I think he has a prime opportunity in Cleveland. Despite the numbers of quarterbacks they have, there is opportunity there. And I think it can be had quickly.
Limits?
Up next, the Steelers were more interested in quarterbacks when?
There were other quarterbacks that they had that they were more interested in the middle to late rounds. You know, as I said, they liked Jackson Dart, but when he went, now if he was there in the third round, which I didn't expect, I don't think they did either because they had a first round grade on him. But, they had other quarterbacks in the middle of the round that they thought that they might be interested in.
Joe?
I mean, Will Howard is the obvious topic of conversation there. I'm sorry, Bob. I got a message that the power is now out at my house where we have
you had it on, now it's off? Wow.
Yes, it was on, and then there's all kinds of things going on with everybody, but now the power's off, and it's off all over Greentree. It was. I'm shocked that it's
Robinson
on here.
Too.
Weren't you surprised when you came in here and it was on?
A little bit surprised, yes. I ended up working a volleyball game last night, and the high school had power, but like nothing around it really had any power. Kind of odd.
Well, Will Howard becomes the topic of conversation. I was mentioning to Kabali that Chris Canty, former NFL linebacker, feels like Howard would play or should play over Rudolph if it comes down to those two. Do you feel like that? How do you feel about Howard? Maybe I'm wrong. I'm thinking of him as an afterthought that with where he was picked and the guy that I watched. Do you feel differently?
Yeah, I think he has value there where he was picked. Not that that changes anything because he still has to put up numbers and perform. But, you know, playing at that high level in those meaningful games and his response after that loss to Michigan, the way they did as a group, and he specifically, he made some really good throws. I was looking back just to make sure of some of these throws down the middle of the field. I mean, he combined with many players for significant plays in third down situations. So shows me a lot whether or not he can translate to the next level. I think, as we talked about earlier, he could be at very worst a career-long backup, make a lot of money like Chase Daniel and,
I guess I didn't really see the point unless the guy's actually going to get some kind of chance.
Well, you never know, though. Maybe he is one of those guys who's a bloomer. Could be in years.
Next.
All right, from Jerry, the Steelers, in terms of their quarterbacks, have their eyes set somewhere.
They are all in 2026 on moving up and trying to get what they believe to be their next franchise quarterback, or certainly their starter for a number of years. And so I think their plan all along has been geared that way.
That seems
clear. You've heard that a lot from me, right? That's
yeah.
kind of what I thought all the way through.
Absolutely. That seems very clear. And again, I just question that. That's a nice concept and a nice theory. Do they have one of those guys in particular in mind? And are we sure that they're going to be better than the quarterbacks from this year? I don't know. But it sounds like, yeah. Or Bob, is it based more on the fact that the draft is in Pittsburgh and nobody in this class blew them away?
I think all of that. And I think that they have a better feel that there are going to be more options at quarterback with more quarterbacks who could be viewed as first-round picks. And they will have opportunities to create a market for themselves and move up if necessary because of all these extra picks they're going to get. Plus, you know, who knows where they're going to finish? They can help themselves by actually not having a good season, even though that's not what they're obviously looking for this year. But if it does happen that way, then all of a sudden you're in a better position to do that next year. So it's going to be, I tell you what, with that as a backdrop, they're hosting the draft and quarterbacks are the number one topic and they need a quarterback. That's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. And just the fan base itself who will turn out to watch this.
Anything else from Dulac? I have something from him.
Sure.
He told Rich Eisen that if Harmon had been gone, so if their defensive linemen that they had graded highest were gone, they were going to go running back and take Hampton or Travion Henderson. What would you have thought of that, Bob?
Well, I wouldn't have liked it. I think those guys are going to be decent pros for sure, maybe better than that, but you know, they're going to get a running. There are a lot of running backs that can get in a lot of different ways. Most people have felt that way about the running back position, unless it's elite. I don't know if those guys are in the Bijan Robinson or the Gibbs mold. You know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But if I wasn't sure, I wouldn't do it. They must have been sure that one of those guys could have that ability to be something special in the running back game, but I still wouldn't have done it. There are other needs on defense. We talked so much about offense and needs there, but the defense really needed help given how they ended the season. You can't be physically dominated like that and not cited as a problem.
Give me your over-under on Aaron Rodgers arriving here. I'll set it at August 1st. I'll set it at the beginning of training camp.
Well, that would be July.
July 26th, yeah. Whatever.
I'm going to say July 25th then.
Really? We won't see him all off season.
You're asking me my bet, and that's how I would bet it. I think you're going to, if you do see it, it'll be, I don't think OTAs attract him at all. And I don't think, but if I were him, I'd want to be part of all of this. I'd want to get this done. I heard his explanation on Pat McAfee that he has all these ancillary things that are important. I get that. We all do. Geez, there are people out here right now who have homes been destroyed. But that doesn't mean you stop what you're doing also. You have to figure out ways to do both and multitask. He should want to do that earlier. And I say that from his point of view. He should want to get to know his team, know his offensive coordinator, know everything. And sometimes these sessions are very important in that development.
Well, of course, this isn't the Jets.
Regardless of 41, 42 and all his experience, he still needs to do it.
Because it's a totally different scenario than walking into New York and keeping your own terminology, hiring your own coordinator, bringing in your own receivers. No, in this situation, he's got to learn an entirely new playbook, new terminology, and new personnel all around.
Yeah.
How do you do that from the beginning of just training camp?
No,
But I do. I'm not saying I disagree with you that you're over under, because I don't know that he has any value in the off season that he puts value into it. Limits over under, you know, late July. Let's say July 25th for Aaron Rodgers to come here.
I think it's going to be a little bit before that. It might end up being June 1st. It might be July 1st or whatever. I do think that he will be here with a little bit of like a week or so buffer, 2 week buffer before training camp, just to be able to get himself settled in a little bit more in the organization. I think that the Kabali dates that he mentioned, look, he could skip OTAs, but after that, somewhere between May 22nd and June 6th might be a little too optimistic. I think it'll come somewhere a little bit after that.
I just don't think this is going to go well. Anyway, who knows till he gets here. We were watching the aftermath of Bucks Pacers last night with
what a
TJ
terrible
McConnell.
Ending for Milwaukee. TJ was great, 18 points again. Off the bench, he's as good as anyone in the NBA.
Fantastic. And as soon as the game ends, the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo, Milwaukee star, makes a beeline for what you think is a fan, but it's Tyrese Halliburton's dad. And they have a confrontation, and Giannis has to be held back. Now, apparently the dad had a giant sign or shirt with his son's picture on it that he was showing to Giannis and you know, swear words and things, according to Giannis, were uttered by the dad. Tyrese Halliburton apologized after the game for his dad's behavior, which I thought was good.
Yes.
And the dad put out a social media post saying I was wrong. But it made for pretty riveting theater to see this tiny little man, and he is a tiny man, with this giant Bucks superstar, and you thought it was going to get physical, Bob. And if it had, I don't know if a life would have ended or not. But this was Antetokounmpo after the game talking about this confrontation. And Bob, I want to hear what you think of all this afterward.
My mom, that she's never missed the games from February 11th or 13th when she came in Milwaukee against the Knicks. She's never missed the game. When we won the championship, I remember my mom, she was scared to cross. She was like, am I allowed to come and hug my son? I see, except now my brother does media for this year. He wants to come back and play. But like, except the Nets, you've never seen my family. Like, see, of course, I see. This is not something that we do. We don't. I try to keep my family away from the game. But losing the game, emotions run high, having a fan, which at the moment I thought he was a fan, but then I realized it was Tyrese's son, which I love Tyrese. I think he's a great competitor. He was his dad, sorry. Coming in the floor and showing me his son a towel with his face. This is what we do. This is what we effing do. This the F we do. This. I feel like that's very, very disrespectful. You know, my dad, if you guys go and ask and learn, my dad's not with us no more. My dad used to come in the family room and was the most respectful person ever. You know, when you come from nothing and you've worked your whole life to sell stuff in the street, and your whole life you'll be scared of the police of deporting you and sending you back to your country. You have to protect your kids with all means. You create this mentality of being humble your whole life to not kind of disrespect anybody, not make the tension high, the emotions high, so anybody can, you know, snitch on you, say something bad about you. So when he came here, I remember, I was like, Dad, why are you so humble? Why are you going to the family room? You don't even say a word. You sit in the back. Why are you like that? Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry. That's how I grew up.
I applaud that 1,000%.
He was about to get in more of what actually happened. But I do too. And, you know, we see this from youth leagues on up.
Yes. This more so than ever before.
Ridiculous promotion of your kid where the guy was swearing at the other team's star in an NBA game, Bob.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I love the fact that he explained his culture, how it worked, why he was afraid, you know, just, hey, you don't need to get involved. Be respectful. He said that word a few times. And obviously there are people out there who don't play by that same playbook, and they should. And you see it at youth stuff all the time. You entrust your kids to play in a program which has a coach. Now that coach is under a lot of stress because he's dealing with a lot of families, not just the kids, but now the families of the kids. You got to trust him. And if he makes decisions, you have to tell your kids, hey, all you can do is work harder to make him change his mind. That's all you can do. If I'm going to start bullying the coach because I'm the dad and I know my son better than you, then, I mean, you're sending the wrong message. And unfortunately, this is very prevalent, not just in sports today, but in all walks of life.
Meanwhile, and that was well said, switching topics rapidly from your place, Bob, KDK drone team above Oakmont Country Club, where severe the storms from yesterday destroyed a massive hospitality tent set up for the U.S. Open. And weren't some residences on the course destroyed?
Very close to there, just depending on where you lived and how this storm went. Because
we were just there looking at these hospitality tents.
They're not even tents, Joe. They're like monstrosities, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know how many of them specifically, but that's a lot of work they put into that. They say, the USGA says, they'll be ready for the Open regardless of what happens. So I assume they're going to put a lot of money into a cleanup and a redoing these structures that have been compromised with this storm. But, man, it's tough. And, yeah, Ian Smith, we have a lot of good drone operators down there at KDK. And, boy, those are the best views you can get, just high atop it so you could see the – and it's not just there, but it's all these homes that we've seen and all the power lines and all the things that are just dangerous for everyone.
It's crazy. Now they're going to be scrambling, I would imagine, to get
Oakmont
things ready.
Well, glad they didn't have trees, because if they had, most of them would have been gone, apparently, right? So they got rid of the trees over the last 20 years by themselves.
All right. Well, let's bring it back full circle to where we started the show today, which was with, you want to call it Derek Shelton Watch? You just want to call it the state of the Pirates? What is happening? They're 11-19. They need to go something like 74-58, somewhere in there, to get anywhere near a wild card. They've been blown out the last three games. Zangrilli feels like 60 games is the barometer here. I feel like there's nothing between game 30 and 60 that I don't know that I would need to know. I know Ben Cherington was on his show on this station a couple weeks ago saying that the best time frame that he believes to measure your team, I think he said about 40 to 50 games. So is that right? Should that be the time frame for Bob Nutting, or would you already have made a move? And how important is a manager anyway? Let's talk about all of that coming up at 412-928-9370 as the Pirates get ready to continue a series against the Cubs, who look really good so far this season. I think, Bob, we started off today with some passionate arguments and passionate agreements about the Pirates. It's almost ridiculous to say anything but the season's over. That doesn't mean some cool things won't happen. Some great stuff with Bubba Chandler coming up. Dan Zangrilli maybe said, I don't know, like the second week of May or whatever. But when you look at the mathematics of the situation and you're sitting here at 11-19, last year, to get a wild card, it took 89 wins. You have to go 78-54 to do that, which means to get to 86 wins, you have to go 75-57. It's unimaginable. Am I right about that? It's unimaginable.
Yeah, that's 16 games over 500. I don't see this group being able to do that. You're right. There'll be some good days along the way, a couple of streaks here and there, and some certainly potential at work, but to make up for an 11-19 start with the potential of getting worse now with two more from the Cubs and then three with the Padres, that ain't going to be easy.
They start 1-5. They go to 2-7. They go to 5-11. It just hasn't gotten better. They haven't won more than two games in a row yet. They don't even have a three-game winning streak. They're on pace to lose 103, and that brings us back to the manager. And regardless of our opinions on who's first to blame here, and I think we all know who is, the owner of the team, I'm just astounded that a coach manager in any sport would last this long losing this prodigiously. It's pretty remarkable. I don't know how many times this has ever happened in the history of sports, that a guy would lose like this for this long, get off to a start like this in year six, and still be here.
Well, that's what you just mentioned is the key, year six. And this really makes everyone part of the blame game here. You get not only that, from the GM point of view, you got all these high picks, and not many players from 6 years worth of picks and development of those picks have we seen crack the lineup here on a regular basis? Take Skeens away from it. Who else has done that? Not many, if at all. And they need more of that. If you're going to play this small ball mentality, then you better hit on this stuff and do it the way Tampa has done it. At least get some, you know, some production from those guys. So one, you can either trade them and get more assets or something younger, or two, make them hit and keep them there. And that requires paying people. That also requires, if you don't hit on it, you got to go out in the free agent market. None of this has happened. But the manager is ultimately responsible for the record. And if that's the case, then, yeah, it's 6 years is too long. It should have probably happened, I would have said, clean sweep at the end of year five.
I mean, look at the lineup stacked up against each other. I love Andrew McCutchen. He's actually off to a good offensive start. But he's your three hitter. Joey Bart's your cleanup hitter. And I also like him, by the way, as a player for the future. I really like him and the present. But it's just like you match up these two lineups and they got guys one through, you know, eight or so, even nine, that are just smashing the ball, the Cubs do.
How about their, you know, their catcher, Kelly, who last night hit a two-run home run?
Yeah.
They signed him to a two-year deal. He's 30 years old. And he's off to a six home run, 18 RBI, 1.371 OPS start.
I know.
You know, that's how you get, like, and Ian Happ has been consistently good for them, a Gold Glove
Kyle
guy.
Kyle Tucker, who the Pirates,
and he has 25 runs batted in already.
Could have made a play for.
Sure.
Right?
No, they have, and they have some good pitching too.
Suzuki's a guy they signed.
We saw Imanaga last night. He got hurt, but he did, you know, he got a win.
And yeah.
Silenced them.
And another unbelievably anemic performance. They had one extra base hit. How many times they've been shut out? Limits five. Yeah,
best worst in baseball. I was gonna say best, but they're number one in that category.
And the Cubs, this is the first time since 2013 they had a game where they recorded zero strikeouts for their batters. No one struck out.
Man, if the Pirates don't get a great pitch game, they're usually in big trouble. Of course, they're usually in big trouble anyway. How many times are you gonna throw Tommy Pham out there, Bob?
Well, they signed him to $4.7 million. They're not going to let him sit, so he'll go out there unless someone comes along who can supplant him. And that's what I was referring to with the, you know, drafted prospects and their development of those prospects.
And then you have Canario pinch hitting for Tommy Pham. I mean, these are guys you have when you're tanking, the Canarios of the world. Well, what are they doing, honestly? You should, by year six, have everybody slotted into a position and have a bench that has real players on it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is just more of the same with this stuff. And we've said it, and I'll say it again. It's the angriest I've ever seen the fan base in all my years here. And I've seen them plenty angry around the Aramis. I mean, they're perpetually, and rightfully, they're perpetually livid. The Aramis Ramirez debacle, all kinds of things. I've never seen it like this.
Well, no, and quite frankly, they deserve it based on what's happened and the product they're putting out there. As I said, it's all about winning. Winning is the ultimate promotion you can do in any sport. Forget all the other stuff. Winning. If you don't win, people are not going to respond. If you don't win, they won't come. If you do win, they will come, even if you jack prices up.
And the thing, I think one of the misnomers is that, oh, yeah, people are still going to games. I mean, are they? As I look at National League attendance right now, the only team below the Pirates is who? Miami? That's it. All right, Limits. What's Cooking brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. Social media's Biggest Loser brought to you by Awaken 180. Visit them at awaken180weightloss.com. And the 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19, Peters Township. Good night, Bob.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you.
See ya.